welcome back everyone to At HTO Football. Look, we are still on the road to Qatar 2022. I feel like I've said that a lot recently, but it was a road, then it was a high street, then it was a little close, and we are very, very nearly there. It's across the street now. It's just a short zebra crossing away from it. We're reviewing the very last World Cup before Qatar 22, and that of course is Russia 2018. I am of course joined by my esteemed colleague, Mr. Andrew, which I'll throw it over to shortly. But we're also welcoming another fantastic guest for you, Richard Foster, football author, historian, writer, general footballing god, who we will speak to shortly, author of World Cup Nuggets. So we're delighted to have him on board. Andrew, we remember this one as England fans.
Yeah, it's not too far in the rearview mirror, right? We're one away now. This is our last pit stop. I think the petrol gauge is ticking away, isn't it? We're running out of petrol on the route, but this is our last one. We're delighted to be welcomed by Richard this evening. So
I was going to say, well, we're lucky heading to the Middle East if we're running low on oil, but that's definitely a different debate. Richard, good evening. Thank you for joining us. How are you?
Good evening. Yeah, I'm very well. Yeah. I'm looking forward to the World Cup, but as most people, I have massive reservations about where it's being hosted. But in the end, it's the World Cup. And we can't just say, oh, it's just about the football. But we can look at 2018 and look at the football. And it's obviously a fairly fresh memory for me.
Yeah, for most. And as you say, I mean, we try and... We will try and concentrate on the football, in many ways, some similarities, although not to the same extent with some of the furore around Russia 18. What were your, sitting here now 4 years on, what are your abiding memories of the tournament itself? Do you look back on it fondly, or actually is it one that you have to quickly dust off the memory bank because actually you've pushed it to annals somewhere far away?
Yeah, I think the overall balance is it was a fond memory. There were the same reservations, as you say, because Russia and Qatar were actually the same, were appointed in 2010. Mm. And we had our reservations about Russia, particularly after the Euros, when the Russian fans didn't really do much for their diplomatic efforts. There were lots of issues with human rights as well, which we've got again with Qatar. But as an Englishman, I'm bound to have fond memories of 2018. I was actually for the Colombia game. I was at a family wedding in Portugal, and I ended up in a bar with my son, and the bar was completely empty apart from three Colombians who I don't know where they came from because we were in Porto, but we suddenly realized that this whole bar had been emptied and we were next to three Colombians, and to watch us win that penalty shootout, it was a pretty strange environment. My son and I did manage to control ourselves and we didn't want to rub the Colombians' noses in it. But when they left, we did get a bit crazy. And the other thing about being in Portugal is that we were meant to be flying back and getting back in time for the Swedish game. Didn't quite work out that way. So we were delayed. So we were actually in the air when the game kicked off, which... considering England, obviously been to quite a few quarterfinals, I've probably watched all of them, but I was on a plane, which wasn't great. As soon as we landed, the phone's out and someone said, oh, we're 1-0 up. And I went, no, come on, of course we're not. And then someone said, oh, they've equalized, the usual rumor mill. But then I got a train back home, and whilst we're on the train, we got the second goal, and there we were. And then it's just a weird thing to experience being out of the country in a country where, Portugal obviously in the World Cup, but they didn't seem that bothered. Whereas if I'd been in England, completely different situation. So fond, if a weird memory. I think overall the tournament was a good tournament. It had the right winner in the end. I think they were the best team. We know that quite often the best team don't win the World Cup. I thought the final, I mean, it's probably one of the best finals in many a year. You know, we had a 4-2. Did you know that 4-2 is the most common score in a World Cup final? You do now. You need to read the book. But the fact is that there were more goals. There were as many goals in 2018 than there have been in the four previous finals put together. You know, we'd had a couple of 1-0s, a 1-all. So I thought the final was definitely a lift up. It was probably, in my memory, the best final since 1986, the Argentina, West Germany and Mexico. And, you know, that, as I said, France deserved to win it. Croatia were, you know, once we got over the fact that they beat us in the semi-final, and quite frankly, they beat us fully deservedly because they got control of the game. And, you know, the masterclass that Modric gave us that night, you know, we have to learn from that, whether we do or not. And as I said to my son at the time, I said, we've scored far too early in this game. You know, so we don't score in the fifth minute.
A bit like the Euros final a couple of years later.
Yeah,
it had a horrible similarity, didn't it?
It really did. And, you know, obviously it was a fantastic run. It was the first World Cup semi-final I had remembered being sort of three years old for the 1991. So, you know, not quite watching that one in the same vein. But you're right, horribly similar to the Euros final. And I wondered whether in the Euros final we would have learned and continued and really gone for the jugular when we want one a lot. Because I don't think Italy never wrestled back control like Croatia did. Like you said, I think we went up early against Croatia, but once after about 40 minutes, they were so much better than us. You know, second half, they really, the way they controlled the ball, we were, you know, I think chasing shadows would be a bit unfair, but we weren't far off that. They, you know, they had complete control of the ball versus the Euros final, where I actually feel at any point, if we'd gone for it, we probably would have won that game. You know, we weren't aggressive enough post the opening goal. I think Italy were there for beating for us versus Croatia being, I think, just a bit too good. But France, for me, you're right, were deserved winners. They felt like they almost didn't get out second gear in a lot of the tournament. But when they did, they were the best team, weren't they?
And very strong defensively, bar the sort of Argentinian game, really. They were shutting teams out throughout the whole tournament. I mean, the kickoff of the tournament, Richard, it's always nice to see a host get off to a really bright start. They thumped Saudi Arabia, who seem to be part of the furniture in World Cup Saudi Arabia, don't they? Russia had a decent run, knocking out Spain on penalties, I think.
Yeah.
And that always helps a World Cup, I think, doesn't it?
Well, of course, you know, South Africa are the only host not to get through the first group. But if we're looking forward, I can imagine that, you know, a lot of people who are saying Qatar aren't going to get out of the group. So it'll only be the second time that a host has failed to do that. Russia,
might be some more questions if they do.
There could be. I think there would be quite a few questions thrown up about this. But, I mean, I did watch it. It wasn't the greatest game, actually. Thing is, a 5-0, you know, it's a thrashing, isn't it? And after the first couple of goals, there was no way that was changing. But as you say, it's good to get the hosts, you know, engaged. Great, they're off to the races. You know, they get through, as you say, they beat Spain, which I would not have predicted that. Russia beating Spain, I know it was on penalties, but that was a surprise. I thought the stadiums were great. I mean, it's obviously a huge country, and I had a couple of friends who went to it. They said, you know, the travel was ridiculous, which when we compare what happens in Qatar, all the stadiums were within 40-mile radius. So you could get a bus and you could still be in all the stadiums in time. But looking at France, you say they would... You see, normally I associate the French with free-flowing, attacking football. But as Andrew pointed out, actually defensively, they were really good. Varane, you know, had an excellent tournament. And TT, you know, they just looked great.
And relied on some of those defenders for big goals as well.
Well, you know, I mean, I know we're going to talk about this. It might be an good segue into it. I think Pavard's goal, I know it got goal of the tournament, it was the best goal. Because, I mean, my word, you just need to watch how he cuts across the ball. And it was a very important goal, because if you remember, Argentina were actually 2-1 up at the time. And if France hadn't scored relatively quickly, you could see Argentina would have gone on and possibly won that game. But the way, the way he hit it, and he's a fullback, you know, it's his first international goal, so it's not a bad starter. I'm not sure he's scored another one since. But he explained that he was just trying to push it back to where it came from, and it just deserves continuous repeats, because it just curls absolutely beautifully and arcs into the top corner. And, you know, I don't want to give France the whole tournament, but it was the best goal. It was probably the best game. You know, 4-3 is a pretty good game in a knockout. They won it. They had the best player. I mean, I think Modric actually was voted the best player, but Mbappe obviously came onto the scene, young guy, and impressed everybody, because he's just got that. Thing about Mbappe is, clearly he's got pace, he's got skill, but he's got that steely way of just saying, right, I'm in on goal here. It's going to be a goal.
And it's star quality, panic. Isn't it? Yeah,
there's no panic. He just knows what he's going to do. 99 times out of 100, he will do it. And I thought he came to the forefront in that tournament.
Yeah, he catapults himself, doesn't he, into World Cup folklore immediately. And, you know, he's compared to Ronaldo, like obviously the original Ronaldo, R9. And he took a couple of World Cups to get there. Ronaldo obviously was part of the 94 squad, but didn't really feature. 98 ended in sort of disaster for him. And then he goes on to win in 2002. Whereas Mbappe, there's that immediate impact on the biggest tournament in world football.
Exactly.
And then they tighten up as well after that. You know, you've got the superstars flowing forward from an Mbappe perspective, Pogba as well. I remember France going into that tournament as favourites, if you looked at the depth of their squad, or one of the favourites anyway. But I wondered at the time, and I did. This is why I thought England had a good chance. I thought, I don't think there is a favourite. Maybe this is one tournament too soon for France. And actually, if you looked at a lot of their young stars, you know, Pogba was of an age where he theoretically should be at his pomp now, and you could argue that he's not, and he was much better for 4 years ago than he is now. But a lot of their players, I thought they would be peaking for the Euros beyond, or this World Cup that we're about to witness. But actually, those young players, they took to the stage and then steered, as you say, by steely defence. They don't concede a goal in the quarterfinals or semi-final. And I think that is always the mark, isn't it, of a great winner. I also wanted to get your thoughts on Belgium, because there's another team that were fated as a golden generation, having maybe their time had arrived. Obviously, they shared England's group. Yeah. And with that strange last game where no one really wanted to win, because frankly the route was easier for the team who didn't win. And obviously they go on and they win that epic quarterfinal, or certainly a titanic tussle. It wasn't necessarily an epic game, but a big game against Brazil. But they go and they fall short, don't they?
Yeah, I mean, there are so many golden generations around, aren't there, that have disappointed. So England have had a few, never really delivered. They talk about the Portuguese golden generation. They haven't won a World Cup. And then Belgium. I think probably this year is the last chance for this golden generation. You know, De Bruyne and the like. It's pretty much, this is their peak and this is the time that they need to deliver. Again, with Belgium, you always think that they're going to do something and then they don't quite do it, and I'd be very frustrated if I was a
sounds familiar.
But it's just, there's something just not quite there. I remember one of the best games was actually Belgium's game with Japan, when Japan were 2-0 up,
3-2, yeah,
only 20 minutes to go, and you think, oh well, they've got this, and then Belgium come back and unbelievably Chadley scores the winning goal in the 93rd minute. And anyone who watched Chadley when he was in England probably wouldn't expect him to score that sort of, you know, the winning goal in any game. But they were better than us, weren't they? So they beat us twice. So they beat us in the group and then they beat us in the third place playoff. And I think it was almost, that was the tournament if they're going to win it, that was possibly it, rather than the one that's coming up. So
yeah, I agree with that, yeah.
I just can't see them. I mean, Lukaku is a good centre forward. I think his form has obviously dipped a little bit. He had that great season into Man United, you know, never really did it. And I'm not sure. I mean, clearly De Bruyne is a fantastic player. Eden Hazard, and he's hardly played for Real Madrid, has he? So I think they're gone beyond their peak and they're now coming down the other side of the mountain.
You know what I think it is as well with Belgium? I mean, De Bruyne aside and Hazard in his pomp. So we're going back to 2018 here.
Yeah.
I do feel that we looked at Belgium through a Premier League lens, and there were a lot of Premier League players in that team that were good players, but there weren't many players in there that would get into top sides across world football, bar maybe De Bruyne, Hazard at his best.
Company
was kind of coming to the end of his sort of time at Belgium. Obviously, he's a top centre back, but it was then a case of it was full of very good Premier League players: Alderweireld, Vertonghen, Vermaelen. Dembele,
they're getting on now,
exactly.
They?
And although I think we always fancied Belgium to do well, we all watch the Premier League. They're all in the Premier League, so it was like, oh, they've got a good team. But actually, when it comes to the crunch at top level, that's why they fall short, because they didn't have enough elite footballers in their team.
They did though have enough to beat Brazil, and we're getting on 20 years now since Brazil's triumph, clearly, and which almost is Brazil means they're due. Thoughts on their 2018, but I guess I'm being sneaky, Richard. Thoughts on how they will go, Brazil in the next few weeks, tipped by many.
Yeah, as you say, the last four World Cups have been won by European teams, which, you know, it is 20 years since the last South American was obviously Brazil in 2002. They are favourites, but they're not favourites every tournament. I can't remember when they weren't favourites.
It's true.
And that they should, you know, if you look at their squad, it is incredible. And certainly in the top three or four. But if you think about 2014, and what happened in that semi-final? You know, people say, "Oh, you know, you can just get over that." I don't think they're over that at all. I think that was such a devastating blow. Still can't quite believe it happened. Mm. You know, Germany scored 5 goals in the space of 20 odd minutes. 5. Yeah,
4 in 6 minutes they scored. It was just crazy.
You know, you were watching it and going, "This isn't real. This is," and for such a devoted country to football, I still think underneath it all that hurts them. I mean, they talk about when they lost to Uruguay in 1950 in the Maracanã as being, you know, they still talk about it now, 70 years ago. So there is maybe there's something in the psyche that just it still eats at them, and you know, there is a vulnerability about them. I mean, say when you look at it on paper, they should probably just walk through the tournament without a problem.
They've got incredible players. I think you're right in terms of there might be something when they come up against a technically efficient, defensively resolute European side. Will they have those scars? The last four World Cups they've gone out to European opposition as well.
Yeah.
In quite sort of, well, other than clearly the 7-1 game, but in quite sort of low scoring tactical affairs where actually they've just been bested, you know. I think the Dutch did, I think 2010 or it was the World Cup, they did it. The last one was Belgium, as we say. Previous to that was France as well. They had them in 2006, obviously the Henry goal and the 1-0 in the quarterfinal. Yeah. So yeah, I wonder. And Tim, we were lucky enough to have Tim Vicker on the line. He said the same thing. He wonders that's the one question mark, that if they come up against a sound European outfit, a Germany, a Spain, who are going under the radar without a top striker, but will that be in the back of their mind? Will we see suddenly a bit of a headlights piece where they get just messed
up? And at this level of the game as well, it's really fine margins, isn't it, as well? You know, it's what like as Richard alluded to a minute ago, when you look at their squad on paper, why they're my tip and a lot of people's tips is it's not played on paper. Obviously, it's played on the grass, but they have got the perfect blend of experience. The spine is experienced. Mm-hmm. They have Thiago Silva, they have Casemiro, they have Neymar. And then what that's littered around that is really exciting young talent that's very young in players like Martinelli. But then they've also got people that are 24, 25 that are approaching the prime of their career. Like people like, obviously, Vinicius is slightly younger than that. But I do feel that they've pretty much got every box ticked. Now, that doesn't mean that they obviously have the right to just go on and walk it. But I do feel that this is the best chance I give a Brazil side for a long, long time. Even though they are always going in as favourites, like you said, they do tend to just have the right to be favourites in Brazil with the name that they have. But I do feel genuinely this is the best shot they've got. But we'll see if the scars...
I fancy a South American winner. I wouldn't rule out Argentina. I think we could be looking at that final, but we will see. We will fire the classic questions, but you have already given up one of them, so we'll start there. But favorite goal then, obviously, was the 2018 World Cup. I'm talking about was the Pavard one. Any others spring to mind, Richard? That sort of crackers.
I mean, there are lots of goals, aren't there? I mean, there were, you know, pretty much 160 odd goals. It's trying to pick out, you know, a couple out of that is quite tricky. And I just think Pavard's was so exceptional in terms of the state of the match. I mean, if you score the fifth goal and it's a cracker, it just doesn't have the same. You know, Kane, you know, scores the hat trick against Panama. I can't remember any of his goals particularly because it was I think for me, a goal has to be important. It has to have a relevance to be the goal of the tournament. And Pavard definitely had that. And you could say Trippier's free kick in the semi-final was an incredible goal, but in the end, it didn't come to anything, and it just loses that potency because
you're so right. Actually, you know, if you flip the game, and it's which would have been lovely, wouldn't it? But say Croatia wins up early, and that Trippier free kick is in the 85th minute to equalise, send us into extra time where we go on and win the game 2-1.
Yeah.
That Trippier free kick would be etched on everyone's mind as the phenomenal free kick that hits the top bins, as they say, you know, to send England at the death into extra time, which will then goes on and sends them to their first World Cup final in, you know, nigh on 60 years, not quite, but more than. And so, yeah, you're right. It's when it carries weight, it's all the better, isn't it?
I do think it's worth mentioning Ronaldo's
hat-trick against Spain. Yeah,
you know, the free kick to make it 3-3 is a fantastic free kick. I guess it's a bit too early on in the tournament, but I would agree with Pavard, really. The technique and the moment as well. The technique is outstanding. A tournament for curling strikes, actually. There's a couple of earlier ones in the tournament with Coutinho, is a beautiful curling strike for Brazil in the group stages. Quaresma with his famous outside of the right boot against Iran, I think, in a 1-0 drab game, which is why it doesn't get remembered. But I think we're probably all in agreement with Pavard for this one.
Good old Benjamin.
Again, yeah, Benjamin, absolutely great name. Also, games of the tournament, we've mentioned a couple crackers, clearly. The final itself, you shouldn't rule out the value of a 4-2 World Cup final. The Japan-Belgium 3-2 comeback winner is always fantastic as well. I think the Uruguay game for me as well was pretty good. The Uruguay Portugal, again, Portugal fancied, had a generation for many years. Cavani brace, I think. Gets a couple, and that's a good. I also love games which ebb and flow. Essentially, when I think Portugal lead. And then, I think Uruguay score, Portugal equalise, and, you know, they go on and get a winner at Uruguay. So those are games good and stand out. We weren't really involved in thrillers, were we? We just sort of either won quite comfortably or ended up losing.
I do think it's worth touching on. I mean, we're probably probably sort of coming out of the bracket here of the question for Richard, but that penalty shootout against Colombia, I mean, it was drama. I mean, I wasn't celebrating in Porto in the sunshine. I remember being in my flat in Barnet in North London, and I was just going absolutely nuts at that, because, you know, it was like the Brazil Germany thrashing. I couldn't believe what I was watching. Winning a World Cup penalty shootout. I just thought it's definitely worth covering that, isn't it, for a couple of minutes, Richard?
Yeah, well, if you consider the Yerry Mina equaliser was in added time, and you just had this horrible, sick feeling.
Heartbreak.
That was it. And then when it went to the penalty shootout and Jordan Henderson missed, they were 3-2 up.
Yeah.
They were 3-2 up, and you just thought, because I was looking at the Colombians and they were looking very pleased with themselves in the bar in Porto. And I almost knew that we were going to lose. I was just going to say to myself, this has happened before, three times before at a World Cup. It's going to happen again. You just need to get used to this. And then suddenly, you know, a couple of mists. And then, I don't know. I would ask you two this question. When Eric Dier was about to take that penalty, did you think he was going to score?
Do you know what? I think I probably did, and I think that's easy to say now for obvious reasons, because he does. But the way the game had gone, because actually 3 minutes earlier, I would have said we're out. So by the time I'd already gone through that tumult of realization that actually we're not out. By that point, I don't think I could have either faced or foreseen another twist. Because like you said, 25 minutes ago, well, 35 minutes ago, we're definitely through. Mean the last minute, oh my God, here we go again. Mm. Injury time, penalties. Then like you say, we actually blink first in that penalty shootout. Once we have that miss from Jordan Henderson, I think we're out completely. But then once they go through the process and they miss up, by that point I'm sort of like, surely now, because it's all, you know, when it's like not quite name on the trophy, because clearly it was just the round of 16. But I'm like, name on this game, surely. Yeah. Like we've got away with it twice now. But that's probably the only reason. I didn't think I'd see it again, and it did still take them missing two penalties for us to win the shootout.
Yeah, I was going to say, yeah, a lot down to Colombia's poor penalty taking here. I don't think, talking of penalty shootouts involving England, though, I don't think I've ever been as stunned by a penalty miss as when Jorginho misses in the final against us. I mean, like when he walked up, it was like, Jorginho needs to score a penalty to win the Euros. It's like, oh, it's done. It's done. He's going to do his thing. He's going to jog, stop, and just roll it past. And when he missed that, it was, I thought it was ours. But anyway, never mind.
Yes.
A debate for a different day. that was the only other reaction I thought was worth the shout was did cover it quickly earlier, but the Russia to Croatia, another game that actually takes a shootout to decide it. And again, we could have been facing Russia in their semis, which is bonkers, really. I mean, it has to be said, look, we had a fantastic run, but it was fairly fortunate, the run, in terms of the teams we played. Although good teams, I think underrated, Croatia were a very good outfit. But we were a penalty miss or an extra time goal or whatever it may be from facing Russia in the semis. And we really would have gone, you know, we'd have gone Colombia, Sweden, you know, Russia to the finals of the World Cup, which I'm not sure we'll get as lucky in 2022. But
you know. Yeah, I mean, you never know the path, do you? Because you don't know how the groups are going to end up. You don't know who's going to finish second, first, whatever. You can't worry about that. You just got to, the classic cliche, you got to play who's, you know, you're drawn against. And, you know, England for the forthcoming World Cup will be playing, if they get through, will be playing, you know, from Group A. So Netherlands, Senegal, Ecuador, or maybe we're playing Qatar. That would be nice, wouldn't it? And you know, with the fair win that the Qataris get, could you imagine if we lost to Qatar?
I think it'll be the Lampard goal, the ghost goal. There'll be like seven of them in the game. We'll ripple the net, and they'll be like across the line.
They'll move the goal. Say, oh no, that's all right. Yeah, it's Diana Ross coming at you. So the actually, Andrew mentioned it. I think the only other game that was amazing at 2018 was Portugal-Spain. You know, Iberian neighbours, 3-3, and, you know, Ronaldo's hat-trick. I think I'm right in saying, was it a perfect hat-trick? And, you know, as you say, the 88th minute free kick. You sort of knew he was going to score, didn't you? You get that Ronaldo feeling, and maybe not so much nowadays, but when he lined up that free kick, you just thought, 3-3, here we go.
Yeah, you're right actually about that with Ronaldo, because we are in very much the Messi camp here at HTO, Richard, in that regard. Right.
I'm there as well.
Okay, well, welcome.
Welcome.
Everyone's welcome.
We sometimes cut the audio of a guest when they say they're in the Ronaldo camp.
There's always room for the Messi camp at HTO. But what I would say about the different, this is definitely a podcast for another day, the Messi-Ronaldo chat. But one big difference, though, and even though I'm a Messi fan, the thing is with Messi is Messi's permanently genius for me. So like there's not really necessarily moments, it's just constant genius. Yeah. With Ronaldo does have that, you just mentioned it a minute ago, you knew he was going to score that free kick. Yeah. And I do think Ronaldo, maybe not, it's not like he's better than Messi, but in those big moments when the ball is on the spot for a penalty, for example, and I do think this is the case with penalties, you just fancy Ronaldo a little bit more than Messi in those types of moments. And that's coming from a guy that thinks it's no debate in terms of technique. Mm-hmm. But in those big, big moments, those huge moments, you just, when Ronaldo's on the ball, you're just thinking, he's going to do this, he's going to pull it off.
Yeah. It'll be very interesting to, I think we're seeing as United, you know, and this is, we're very much sidetracking, so we'll get back onto World Cup to final out the pod. But like, I think it'll be interesting to see how Portugal set up and go this year, because they've got a quite an exciting squad again. But the cold reality is when Ronaldo's playing every minute for United this year, it's to the detriment of the team. And I don't know. I think that will only surely be the same in the national team, but that's what I'm quite interested to see. We discussed on the last one, Andrew and I, how World Cup kits and international kits, I don't know if we're just getting older now, but they tend to be more boring these days. So we always ask the favourite kit of the World Cup, but it doesn't necessarily have to be from 2018. But do any kits stand out for you, Rich, for 2018, or favorite World Cup kits from yesteryear? Is there one that when you were a young boy that you just sort of remembered that stuck out in the memory as your favorite retro World Cup?
Yeah, well, I know lots of people talk about the fact that when they're 10, that is the crucial work. That's the first World Cup you remember. Unfortunately, I'm of an age where, it was 1970 when I was 10. And I do tell the story a bit. My 10th birthday on June the 14th, 1970, was slightly ruined by the fact that England threw away a 2-goal lead against West Germany. My mother brought me a birthday cake and I just burst into tears. But, you know, we won't go to that. Kit-wise, Brazil, that kit is just... I don't think you can beat the Brazil kit. It's got simplicity, the colours, you know, they had changed their kit because of the disaster in 1950, because they were in white before then. And then you thought, oh, we need to get this. And every time Brazil take to the pitch, I think this is part of the almost the awe that we have for Brazil. Their kit just looks great. Mm. And they look fantastic. And it's just, you know, the yellow, the blue, and the green, it is incredible. Peru, who are in the 2018, I love a sash. You know, I'm a Palace fan. Obviously, I'm going to love a sash because of you know, the 1970s when we got to the FA Cup semi-finals, a third division tied. I won't go on about that. But I love Peru because it's just different. And, again, classically simple. But I think of all the kits... And I think a lot of people voted Nigeria as the best kit in 2018.
Yeah, chevron-y type of thing.
It's too busy. Maybe I'm old. Maybe my eyes are going. But I just don't want lots of things going on. I just want simplicity. So Croatia, I've just got, you know, when they appeared in the 1998 World Cup and did incredibly well, got through to the semi-final, let's face it. That kit is just brilliant. It is brilliant. The red and white checks, you know, it comes out of their national flag. It is brilliant. And even their, you know, their second strip, the black even looks good just with the red. And for me, the Croatian kit actually has become the kit that I look forward to most in a World Cup finals.
Absolutely. Yeah. I do agree. I think the Croatia kit in 2018 was gorgeous. I don't think we've had a good one for a while.
No.
England, we've tended, you know, we've been a bit fluffy. Like they had something on the side as opposed to being bold statement sash or bold statement line, but like the little red cross or something, a little bit extra, as if it's a badge pinned on versus a statement, and or like you said, a nice clean one as well. So yeah, I mean, I wouldn't go too far from that. I think you referenced when you're 10. I think the World Cup for Andrew and I would have probably been 94, but we don't really remember it because England weren't in it. So 98 was proper. And the Brazil shirt there is, for those same reasons, so clean and classical. I know they don't go on and win the trophy, but for me, that always stands out as a childhood shirt, that Brazil 98 one. Two fantastic shirts because the French home shirt was iconic as well, the white lines across it. So good to memories. We will put you on the spot. Who goes? I know we've spoken about Brazil's hopes and they've got a good chance, but who goes and wins the World Cup in Qatar?
Oh, crikey. That wasn't part of the deal. I think you're right. I think you're right, Tom, in a way. I think this is the South Americans' chance. You know, will there be another, you know, a fifth European side winning the World Cup consecutively? I just think it's time for the change. Argentina, you know, they're on a 35-game unbeaten run. So they're in pretty good form. They have got Messi. And they've got a few other quite good players as well, haven't they? So overall, I think it's actually between Argentina and Brazil. European-wise, I'm afraid I'm not going to include England in this. I think Spain, if you consider they're not taking, Thiago hasn't made their squad of 26. That to me is, I mean, he is a standout player in the Premier League. When he plays for Liverpool, they're superb because he knits it all together. He's just got a lovely technique. He can't get into their 26. So either Luis Enrique is mad, which I don't think he is, or they are a really incredibly good squad. So I think Spain...
So much talent in that midfield, Spain, really. We worry that... Andrew and I talked about Spain last week, and we worry that they don't have, at the sharp end of the pitch, will they score enough goals?
That is very true, because Morata, is he that? Ferran Torres?
Yeah.
Maybe not, but...
But, yeah, Gavi, Pedri, like the midfield, the talent level, I think they'll be great to watch.
Pedri will be a star.
Pedri,
not necessarily in this tournament. Yeah. He was brilliant in the Euros.
Pedri for me is off the charts in terms of excitement levels about how good that guy is going to become. I think he to me looks like he does look like Iniesta 2.0. And obviously you've got people like Gabby in there as well. You've got Rodri, who's not a bad player either. As the tournament arrives, I think Tom and I are convincing ourselves that I think Spain are actually going to go on and potentially win this thing. I really do think that they've got a chance.
Certainly be the Europe's best bet anyway. Yeah, I think you do look at the two South American superpowers and they are probably the favourites. But I think if anyone's going to upset that, I think for me it will be Spain. I think France still have a stacked squad of names who should still be at their pomp, but I don't necessarily think a lot of them are, Mbappe aside. You know, England, I don't think we're good enough defensively. I just don't feel that we're together and quite in the same way. Germany, again, front line missing for me. I just don't see it. It's quite open.
Yeah, Germany look really quite poor. I mean, in the qualifying is dreadful. Like, and the performance levels, I mean, Spain were, for me, the best team at the Euros. I thought that they really looked quite impressive against Italy in the semi, which they, and if they'd won that, who knows, they would have maybe have done a job on us in the final, unlike Italy did. So I think as the days tick by, my belief in Spain is growing. It's just that striker issue, because it's an obvious problem. If they had a David Villa or Fernando Torres, maybe you'd think differently, but they don't. So,
but you've got to consider that when they won their only World Cup in 2010, they only scored 8 goals in 7 games. David Villa actually scored 5 of them.
Mm.
And then they only had 2 other goal scorers, which were Iniesta, who obviously scored in the final, and then good old Carlos Puyol.
Yeah, they were almost just sort of choke-holding teams, weren't they, into submission, really, that in that tournament.
Which again, you think Spain flourishing, attacking, but actually most teams win the World Cup because they're bloody good defensively. And as you said, the problem with England is I don't trust our defence at the moment. It's not quite there.
No, and you know, I think he's done a fantastic job, and I think he comes in for undue, unfair criticism in Gareth Southgate. However, the one thing I would say is I think that is his strength, is when we're being more pragmatic and defensively resolute. Yeah. As I say, I alluded to it earlier, I do think we go and win the Euros if you potentially having a really aggressive coach in that game. You want to go 1-0 up and you go for the juggler, because however, like I said, beyond criticism really for what he's done for the last 2 tournaments, but his strength is being when we're pragmatic and defensive, and I'm not sure we are good enough defensively this time around to play with that style. I think our better bet would be to let Foden, Saka, Grealish all play and just go for attack and try and score more, but we won't do that because it's not his nature, and I feel we'll therefore fall short. But
I mean, the thing is, if you've got a good defence, you don't have to be defensive.
No.
Because you can actually, it's the corollary that you can actually go the other way. Because if you've got a really strong defence, you can go for it. And because you know that when the other team comes at you, you've got a pretty solid chance of stopping them. So, I think you're absolutely right. Southgate gets ridiculous amount of criticism. I mean, he's taken us to a World Cup semi-final. He's taken us to the Euros final. How on earth anyone thinks that, it would be better if we replaced him? Which we'll just talk about this a couple of months ago.
And also, I won't do the line, Andrew. Don't worry about Henri and Champions League. I won't do it. But, there is always the argument that, look, because someone may not get you over the line because of their own failings, even if it is because of their failings, you have to recognise that their strengths also got you there. So unless the individual you're talking about is the perfect coach or the perfect striker or the perfect player, yes, their failings may be the reason you don't quite get over the line. But frankly, if they didn't have all their strengths, you may not have even got to the final at all. So the manager that goes gung-ho and beats Italy 2-3 in that final, which could have easily, I think we could have easily done, frankly, may not have even got us to the final. So it's one of those points.
I mean, football's a fast-changing business. So what I would say with Southgate is, and I'm in agreement with both of you, that I think he does get a lot of unfair criticism. However, we aren't on a good run of results right now. We really aren't. And football is a results business, particularly at international level. And if he doesn't have a good tournament,
I think this is his final one, regardless of the result. I think a free tournament cycle is probably enough for him. I'm not sure he would want to do more, let's be honest. No, even if we, but I also think that, you give someone fresh a go at it, because you're right. The trajectory of England is probably that way. And so therefore, however, he should go out with a lot of respect and a lot of thanks, I guess. But equally, I think we'll be looking at a new manager at the helm.
Especially if Graham Potter gets sacked by Chelsea, it'd be good timing.
Yeah, possibly. So if England win the World Cup, Tom, therefore Southgate has to leave, doesn't he?
He should absolutely leave. Come on.
Yeah. You go out on a high.
Well, this is why, I mean, I think the only thing, again, is like maybe a final loss. I'm struggling to see the scenario whereby it's not right for him to move on. Because if we go out early, I think there'll be, again, unfair, but there'll be pressure for him to leave.
Yeah.
And if we win it, by God, I'd be going if I was Gareth. You walk off into the sunset. So it's almost like what result means he stays on. I think maybe it's another final loss, that close to getting over the line. But that aside, I don't see the result that leads to him staying. You either walk away in sunset, and that would obviously be perfect for all fans as well as Gareth. Or I think the pressure, unduly so, would mean he would depart. But we will see. Richard, thank you very much for joining us this evening.
Been a pleasure.
Thank you. Well, I'm glad you're here. So it's also a Friday evening, ladies and gents. You'll probably get this on a Monday morning for your commute when I release it and Andrew's edited it and we've put it together. But Richard's given up his time on a Friday evening. So thank you very much. Andrew, pleasure as always.
Yep, almost there.
Almost there. Qatar 2022, the road, the sat-nav says less than 4 minutes to your destination. We're nearly there. That was Russia 2018. That was at HGO Football. Keep listening. Speak soon.